Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another session of The Walking Classroom, your personal opportunity to get out of your seat, move around, and listen to vital information for your ever-expanding mind. My name is Lily.
And my name is Joe, and we're walking with our teacher, Mrs. Fenn. Now, as you're walking, make sure you pay enough attention to where you're going. I know it sounds a bit obvious, but you don't want to take a spill while you're walking. You could get a strain.
That's when a muscle gets stretched just a bit too far. If you strain a muscle in your leg or arm, it might hurt right away, or it might start to hurt a little while after you're done moving.
Strains can sneak up on you, like ninjas in the dark. The pain might be there, but you don't notice it until it's too late.
But you also don't want to get a sprain either. Sprains are like strains, since something is getting stretched too far. But sprains happen to ligaments, not muscles, and they usually hurt more.
A ligament is a tough piece of tissue that holds bones together at your joints.
That's why you might strain your leg muscles, but sprain your ankle.
Either way, if you do stretch something too far and it starts to hurt, you're going to want to stop doing whatever it is that's making you feel the pain. Don't just keep on running around like it's going to go away on its own.
Then, tell a nurse or a parent. If they find out that it's just a strain, they'll probably tell you to rest. But if it's a sprain, you might have to get that bad boy wrapped up.
But you'll be back on your feet in no time. No time being 1 to 3 weeks. Back to racquetball or wiffle ball.
Or how about baseball? Baseball has been named America's pastime, and there aren't too many things more American than baseball, with the exception of apple pie, or the Beach Boys.
Or the American flag. And who are the Beach Boys?
Never mind. You can ask your grandparents. Let's just focus on the fact that just like the history of our country, the history of baseball has some real interesting facts.
I know. Can you believe that the Seattle Mariners have never been to the World Series?
No. Well, I do now. But what we're going to talk about is a bit more, historical.
That means we're going to be talking about something old.
Well, not too old. At least not Stone Age old. This podcast is all about Negro League baseball.
You know, I have to admit that before we did the research for this podcast, I had never heard of Negro League baseball.
The Negro Leagues played all across America from the 1920s to the 1940s. Some all-black teams were playing long before that, and others kept playing until the 1960s.
I guess that's not too long ago compared to the Stone Age.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago at all. It's hard to believe that entirely separate Negro leagues were playing while the regular major leagues were playing.
Right. See, the word Negro was a term people used to say instead of African American. The major leagues only allowed white players back then, so the Negro League only had black players.
What's that word for separation? Is it separation? Wait, here comes Miss Fenn. She'll remember. Hey, Miss Fenn, what do you call it when they used to separate white people and black people?
I think you're talking about segregation.
That's it! Segregation! I knew it started with an S.
Yeah, segregation is a really sad part of America's history.
That was when everything was separated, right? There were separate schools for black people and white people, separate places in theaters,
and separate baseball leagues, which is what I was trying to explain before.
All right, the Negro baseball leagues. Yeah, many aspects of life were separated. Some people back then felt so strongly about keeping blacks and whites separate that they didn't even want them to play baseball together.
But thankfully, there are all types of baseball players now. Let's tell the walking classroom students what happened.
Well, when baseball turned into a professional sport in the 1800s, there were some regular teams that had black players. They were treated worse than the white players, but they still played. By the end of the 1800s, major league owners decided they didn't want black players at all.
So black players started their own teams. There were lots of teams made up of just black players, but none compared to the big-paying major league teams. Negro teams kind of traveled here and there, playing other teams, but nothing was really organized until Andrew Ruby Foster came around. Isn't Ruby a great nickname?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to tell the walkers some of the other nicknames. These guys had the best ones. Okay, anyway. So, Ruby Foster was this great pitcher. He ended up on a Negro team called the Chicago American Giants. He was a really smart ball player and a really smart businessman, too. In 1920, he had the idea to bring 8 Negro teams together to make the first Negro National League. Later on, the Negro American League also formed. Ruby wanted to set it up like the major leagues, with pennant races, a World Series, and an All-Star game. If the white teams weren't going to let them in, they were going to do it their way.
Let's tell the walkers about some of the famous players of the Negro League.
Like Hank Aaron?
Yeah.
Hank Aaron started his career in the Negro Leagues playing for a team called the Indianapolis Clowns.
The Clowns? Really? It doesn't sound like a very intimidating team name, but they were referring to clowning. See, Negro teams played really differently than the white teams back then. Not only were they fantastic athletes, they were performers as well. They would sometimes warm up by clowning or doing tricks with the ball. Clowning was fun for the fans to watch, and it showed off the players' skills.
Kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters, except with baseballs instead of basketballs.
Exactly. But that wasn't the only difference. Even though they made a lot less money than the major league players, they played faster, ran harder, and hit further than major leaguers. There was a lot of competition among the teams in the Negro Leagues, but the black teams also had chances to play exhibition games against the white major leaguers, too. All the black players wanted to show off their skills, whether it was against white teams or other black teams. One of my favorite players of the Negro League is James Cool Papa Bell. How's that for a name?
I love Cool Papa. Cool Papa Bell was called the fastest man in baseball, and not just Negro baseball, in all of baseball. Some people thought he was faster than Jesse Owens, the 1936 gold medal winner of the 100-meter dash. He could turn any hit into a single and run fast enough to make triples out of doubles.
Let's talk about some of the other stars.
Sure. Some hitters were said to be as good as Babe Ruth, sometimes better. On the Newark Eagles, there was George Mule Suttles, who swung his bat like Babe. People wanted to see home runs, so they'd yell, "Kick, Mule, kick!" Then there was Josh Gibson from the Pittsburgh Crawfords, who hit home runs as far as Babe Ruth. And Norman Turkey Stearns from Detroit had the most home runs in the whole league.
Let's tell them some more of those funky nicknames.
Okay. Well, there were pitchers like Smokey Joe Williams of the Homestead Grays, Cannonball Dick Redding, who played for the New York Lincoln Giants, Wilbur Bullitt Rogan from the Kansas City Monarchs, but probably the most famous Negro League pitcher was Leroy Satchel Paige.
Satchel, like what you carry stuff in. Cannonball and Bullitt sound like better names for a pitcher.
I agree. But Satchel got his nickname as a kid, not while playing baseball. It didn't matter what his nickname was, because he blew them all out of the water. He was this tall, lanky guy, and everyone came out to see how fast he could throw. He became an all-star, and even got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Did you know that Satchel Paige actually made it into the major leagues?
Really? What team did he play for?
He started his rookie season with the Cleveland Indians when he was 42 years old.
That's pretty old to be playing baseball.
Yeah, that's like as old as my parents.
Lily, tell us more about what you learned during your research about what it was like to play in the Negro Leagues.
Well, they'd travel around a lot, sometimes even playing in major league stadiums when those teams weren't using them. They'd play exhibition games against major league teams occasionally. Other times, they'd play in small towns against local teams. They call it barnstorming.
Yep. And how do you think they were treated in those small towns?
It probably wasn't too nice. Depending on where you were, some restaurants wouldn't serve black people or let them stay in their hotels.
Because of segregation.
Sometimes the players couldn't find a hotel, and they'd get lucky and find some local families who'd take in a few players at a time. Otherwise, they'd sleep on the bus.
But they didn't get treated poorly everywhere. See, they played all the time, all year round. When the season was over, they'd barnstorm. And when it got too cold to barnstorm, they'd go south.
Yeah. Places like Mexico, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, and Cuba didn't have segregation, but they did love baseball. Some players had a better time down there than they did in America. They got paid better and didn't have to play as many games. Up here, they'd play double, even triple headers, just so they could make enough money. Down in Latin America, they would play twice a week and make just as much.
Did you also know that black ball players are responsible for some of the most important inventions to come to baseball?
Yeah, I read about that too.
Then tell us about it.
Well, remember when we said that the Negro Leagues played a little rougher so the players were a little tougher? Guess why Willie Wells started wearing a miner's helmet when he went up to the plate?
Because it was his brain bucket?
Yeah, to protect his head from wild pitches. Sometimes, pitchers would throw at you to show who's boss, and the umpires wouldn't always stop them.
Yep, the first batter's helmet. And why do you think catcher Bud Fowler started putting wooden boards around his shins?
To stop the ball if he didn't catch it?
Probably. But there was also another reason he invented shin guards for catchers. Remember what you said about running harder?
Yeah. I remember reading that some players would slide into home with their feet first, thinking the catcher would drop the ball if their spikes hit them hard enough.
Pretty tough guys, huh?
Nothing sounds tougher than living through segregation.
I know, but there is an end to that part of the story too, isn't there, Lily?
Well, in 1944, during World War II, Major League Baseball got a new commissioner.
The commissioner is like the head honcho, El Presidente. The man.
Right. The new guy, A.B. Happy Chandler, thought that integrating the majors with the Negro Baseball League was an important thing, something that America as a country should allow.
By integrating, we're referring to the term people used when they started allowing blacks and whites to do things together, in the same places. Like integrating schools, so black kids could go to the same schools as white kids.
This idea never once crossed the mind of the previous commissioner. Once it was out that Major League Baseball would allow black players, it came down to which team would be the first to go for it. Also, which player would be the first to step over.
You mean step over the color line?
Yep. The owner of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Branch Rickey, knew how good black baseball players were. And if he got a star, maybe they'd win more games. So he went for it, looked around at the Negro League, made a list, and came up with...
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah. Jackie was an amazing athlete, graduated from college at UCLA, and was a young star in the Negro Leagues. In 1945, the Dodgers signed him and sent him straight to Canada.
Wait, Canada?
Just like today, when a player gets signed, they go to the minor leagues, so Jackie played for the Montreal Royals. Then, in 1947, he was called up to the show.
The show. The real deal. Major League Baseball.
And, in 1947, when Jackie Robinson ran onto the field with the rest of the Brooklyn Dodgers, the color barrier got its first chip. And then came more and more black players, until baseball became what it is today. The thing is, once black players were in the majors, no one really wanted to go out to see the Negro League teams anymore. Suddenly, black baseball fans, who were the biggest audience for the Negro Leagues, were going to the integrated teams' games. So the Negro Leagues were losing players and fans. That's why the Negro National League wrapped up in 1948. The Negro American League struggled along until 1960. When you think about it, Major League segregation helped to create the Negro Leagues, and Major League integration helped to destroy the Negro Leagues.
But if it hadn't been for the Negro Leagues giving those guys a chance to play, maybe people never would have seen how fast cool Papa Bell could run, or how fast Satchel Paige could throw.
I know, you're right. The Negro Leagues were really important, and we can learn a lot from the players, and I don't mean just about baseball. I mean honor and perseverance.
Well said, Lily. Okay, guys, our podcast is just about done. But while you finish your walk, discuss with a partner some of the following questions. First, talk about at least two things that are different in baseball today compared to the Negro Leagues back then. And you're not allowed to use that just black players were in the Negro Leagues. That one's a little bit too easy. Next, share your reactions about the way Negro League players were viewed by the white major league owners, or how they were treated by others when they traveled. Finally, share with your partner your favorite Negro League player's nickname. Try to remember why they were given that nickname and what it represented about how they played baseball. And as always,
happy trails!